Hello there, and welcome to another episode of Ruben's Podcast, a show in which I speak to people from my life to know more about their journey so far and the lessons they've learned along the way. On today's show, I'm speaking with Lewis. I've known Lewis for 10 years now, as a classmate, as a roommate, a co-founder, but above all, as a dear friend. In this podcast, we chat about a bunch of different things, life and lessons during our time at Nivasa, which is the company we both started, the newsletter he recently launched, which has been killing it on Twitter, and his experience joining his family business and moving back to Goa. We also discuss some of our favorite topics like crypto, religion, uncertainty, and the power of media. So let's get into it. So Lewis and I have known each other for very, very long time, to the date, maybe 10 years almost. And usually, I think for the last 3-4 years, we were probably in the same town this part of the year. Like for the last 2 years, I've celebrated New Year's with you. So this year's very far apart. So we'll compensate that. We're doing a podcast.
I don't think it's gonna like live up to last year's New Year's though.
So when I was thinking about what we could do, there's so much under the sun we can talk about. But to make this of most value to people listening in, I think a good place to start is what Lewis, you've been up to for the last 10 years. And I, of course, know very well. You spent some time in consulting, then you went to do Nivasa. You went eventually moved back home, and now you're up to like some cool stuff. So maybe for people who haven't really heard from you or haven't lived with you for the last 10 years, what have you been up to?
I think we got done with college, took up a consulting job because that was what everyone was doing at that point of time. Traveled a bit during consulting, lived in Gurgaon. Then got bitten by the startup wave of 2015 and fortunately was living with someone like you who decided to join me in starting up in the real estate sector, got our asses kicked for 2.5 years, just absolutely rogered, somehow struggled our way through, made it out alive, then moved back to Goa in, I think, 2018, it must have been, right? Yeah, 2018 moved back to Goa. And joined the family business, which has always been my plan ever since I was born, I think. I joined that. It's been about 2 years there at the moment. And off late, I'm still, like during the daytime, I work with the family business. And at night, I'm trying some cool shit out on the internet at the moment, where I write stuff for fun. And that's where I'm at right now. A bunch of random startup experiments like Dot and stuff. But those weren't like... career moves, those were like just fun things that we did.
When we were starting Nivasa, that wasn't the original idea. You left SX to start, right? It was to do something else.
So I think Nivasa went through like what, 3 or 4 iterations. I remember the first time I thought about it, it was just like, I want to build OYO for like long-term rentals, right? Like if OYO can standardize hotel rooms for people so that they can trust a hotel across different states, I want to do that for people that are moving between different cities and are looking for houses, like very simple. We kind of ignored the fact that it was such an asset heavy, capital intensive type of industry that was so fragmented and dirty, and basically only money could win in the short run. We ignored that, but we were, you know, blissfully ignorant 22-year-olds or 23-year-olds, I don't know. And then that kind of really kicked us in the butt, right? For what, 1.5 year where we tried that and just came up against money from other startups like Nestaway, who had like 50 million in the bank. And here were we like two guys with like consulting savings of like, I don't know, man, 3 or 4 lakhs trying to make it in the world.
I know we went through this. So I think for context, Nivasa was basically a company which were trying to build co-living spaces. And what Lewis was mentioning as we were going through multiple iterations is the first year we spent a lot of time, you know, investing and building assets and, you know, a typical non-VC asset heavy business. And then, of course, the years later, we changed the model to become asset life and asset light. And yeah, I think that was probably the start of the end. But if you were to go back, do you still believe that if we had more money, we would have won?
No, so there's a conflict in my mind regarding that. Like, I think the right way to do it is the way that we were trying to do it initially, right? Where we were trying to build it slowly, like building assets with like a serious focus on the actual product, not just the gyan of like startup, let's raise money kind of thing, right? Like we were actually building good products. We actually built apartments that we wanted to live in ourselves. Now, the problem with that is that A, it's not a scalable business in the short run, right? And B, you need a ton of money to do it in either the short run or the long run. And neither of those two things fit well with what we were doing. Like, if we wanted to build it into a large business, we would have had to commit to being in Gurgaon for like, I don't know, 10 or 15 years minimum in order to build it into a business that we were happy or the kind of business that we aim to build it into. And that's not a trade-off that either of us wanted to do. Like, I cannot imagine living in Gurgaon for 15 years of my life. We did not realize that when we started. We realized that maybe 6 months in or, you know, a year in. So because of that, I don't think we could have been successful in that industry. It was a very, very bad, like, founder industry fit. And the second part, which is, you know, raising capital for that kind of thing. Again, the moment you raise capital, you go back to problem one, where you have to sit there for 15 years to build that vision that the VC is giving you capital for, which we did not want to do. Like, we were just in it because, like, okay, it was a cool idea. We knew it could work. And once you're in it, right? Like, then you can't revisit the first idea and be like, okay, let's start with something else. You have already started, you're in it. But I think we learned a lot, so I don't regret anything there. And we got like a fairly graceful exit with some nice publicity and everything, and like definitely learned more than we would have learned in consulting or in like business school for 2 years or 2.5 years. So yeah, no regrets, man. But I wouldn't do it for 15 years, no way.
I'll come back to the stuff we learned, but what do you think killed it? Like, killed it in the sense, what do you think was the main reason why we were just like, we're not going to do this? Was it just the fact that we had to live in Gurgaon 15 years, or do you think it was something else?
One was Gurgaon for sure. That was like at the back of my mind. Like, there was always this, like, as I said initially, there was always this pressure that I have to come back home at some point, right? And join the family business. And that point could not be 15 years away. Even if Gurgaon transformed into a beautiful city, I could not wait for 15 years. And Gurgaon was not going to transform into a beautiful city. So that was the first problem. The second problem was that the industry was just dirty. Like, irrespective of whether it was in Gurgaon or even in Bombay, I think the real estate industry in general is just fragmented and dirty, like full of like, and I don't want to use like, you know, I don't want to insult brokers and stuff on this podcast, but it is what it is. Like, you know what I mean, right? Like, you don't want to be dealing with those people on a day-to-day basis. Like, with, like, it's not fun. I think those are the two reasons.
Yeah. And now you're in the family business, right? Now you're in a very traditional offline first, you know, a business which is, you know, I would say comparable to real estate in the sense it hasn't really changed in the last 100 years, right? The way your generation earlier for you was running is probably similar. Do you still feel real estate was bad, or were we just naive about?
Estate is not bad if you're making a lot of money. The problem is that all the money in real estate is in the buying and selling, not in the service part of things. Right, in the service part of things, you're getting the downside, which is just like dealing with these assholes all day, and are not making a lot of money. Right, you can only make money at scale, but with scale, these assholes also scale. Right, so it's not like you're dealing with 10 problems and you solve them once and then you scale it to 100. No, when you reach 100, the 100, 10 problems become 100.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're selling real estate, you're a developer, you sell it, you make like 10 crores on a building or whatever, and you're out of there. Like, just leave. But if you're doing like managed rentals, then every day you'll have someone calling you being like, my fucking bathroom is broken or like some shit like that. And you're like, bro, I don't want to deal with these problems. Because you're not paying me enough to deal with it.
Talk to me about that experience. That was the highlight.
What have we not done? Like, can you imagine if somebody told you the day you like did really well in your 12th standard boards and then went to like Stephens for economics and you were like at the height of whatever you wanted to be back when you were 18, that in like 4 years time, when you're 23 or 24 or whatever, you are going to be like literally on the beck and call of some random girl in Gurgaon being like, hey, my water's not coming. Come and fix my pump. There was one girl who even called me being like, hey, my bathroom is smelling. Like, do something about it. And like from where to where? And we would do this shit. Like, it's not like we'd complain and be like, oh, fuck off. This is below my, you know, my pay grade. Like, we would have to do it. We were the founders. We were the only two employees at some point. Like, we would fucking do this shit.
Yeah.
But it's like a good ego check, right? Like, very, like, brought us completely back from like Stephen's, you know, right up in the sky to like back to ground, back to reality, being like, if you actually want to make money, it's fucking hard. Like, go and do this shit. So like at the moment for me in life, like absolutely nothing is below my like pay grade or whatever you want to call it. Like, I can do anything. Like, I can be a sales boy tomorrow. I can do like consulting type work day after tomorrow. I can write on the internet like some big gyani, you know, the day after that. Nothing matters. Like, it's all the same. Like,
Yeah.
So I'm guessing it happened to you as well.
Yeah, 100%, man. I think after that, it was like, I call it a biggest slap on my face, which is the biggest reality check in life. Because after, like, basically after 12th standard, suddenly you're this star, right? Either you've topped your class or you've done something, and then you're in Stephens, and then you were in Eco, right? And for some reason you're like, oh wow, we're in economics, right? And then fucking you go to Bain, and then yeah, Nivasa was just a good reality check and be like, you know, nobody gives two fucks of who you are. But apart from that, what would you say are the biggest lessons you learned? What are the two biggest lessons apart from like just getting a good reality check in life you learned from the Nivasa years?
I think at a macro level, I just like founder industry fit is very important. I learned that I don't want to be in a service business for the rest of my life. So I'm going to be avoiding that. Irrespective of what I build, I try to make sure that it's not a service business. If it is a service business, it has to have a really high like margin or payoff.
What do you define as a service business?
Anything that has like repeated touch points with someone who's paying you or who has paid you. So for example, if you're in the product business, let's say like I'm planning on getting into selling alcohol in 2021, that's a pure product, right? I sell it to you and maybe I have service points with like restaurants and stuff, but that's very limited. It's not like I'm renting out a flat to a tenant who's going to call me and be like, hey, my AC is not working, fix it or something of that sort. So I don't like dealing with customers that much on a regular basis, especially with like complaints and stuff. So I think at a macro level, it taught me that, know what you're going after and know what you like with the industry you're going after. Besides that, also just, I think thinking from like first principles is something that it taught me retrospectively. Because when you're there, like bullshit doesn't work, right? Like when you're in the industry, you're trying to sell something, like you can't give gyan and be like, look at this beautiful deck and like buy it. Like, everything has to actually work and like you have to figure out why it's working. And I think that's been something that's just impacted the rest of my life in ways that like you can't really quantify, like, but it happens. Like when everybody has to stay, like when every move you make has to be like bullshit free, it becomes important to actually know why you're doing what you're doing. So yeah, at a high level, I think that's...
Give me an example of what you mean by this. Do you think we were bullshitting our way through Nivasa?
No, we weren't. But I think at some level, you thought you could, right? Like you thought you could just like make this sexy website, build these beautiful, take these beautiful photographs, put them up, be like, yeah, this colony is great and all, and like sell it to someone. But it doesn't work like that. Like you can do that. You'll get the client to like see the place. And then 2 days later, even if they take your bait and they buy it or they rent it, 2 days later, they'll be like, oh, this fucking uncle from this cooperative society is like, get the fuck out. You can't get guests here. Like shit like that. Like that we would know, but like you'd want to like, make it nice and rosy, put it in front of people and like try to hide the bullshit, basically.
Yeah.
You can't. Like that's one big learning from that entire. And it's good, I think, with everything that we do in life now, like that's just a lesson that has stayed, right? Like you can't bullshit your way through it. You might bullshit it for like 1 day or 2 days, but you can't bullshit it forever.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense.
What about you? Like, what's your biggest learning from Nivasa?
I think number one is just the reality check, right? That was, I think, one big takeaway. From a learning point of view, I think like the most basic thing of building stuff which does not scale, solve a problem for like 10 people, 20 people, 30 people. If somebody's paying you money, that's probably the most, that's the litmus test. If somebody's paying you money for something, and you're, cash flow positive, basically just change my perception, especially after the Zilingo experience also, right? That if you're positive bottom line, if your bottom line is in the black and not the red, your runway is infinite. You can just keep doing this for the rest of your life. So that was one. And I think during the Nivasa experience, I don't know if anything taught me then, but in retrospect, and if I added up Nivasa and Zilingo, I think just really, really enjoying the journey. And be like, you know what? I don't even care about like the destination. This is where I want to get to. But if you really ask me, I don't even want to get there. Like, I'm not.
Yeah, think there were some days where like this is not true? Like, we enjoyed the journey quite often, but there were some days. Like, there were two types of days that I hated. One was like the type towards the end where like we knew we were crashing, right? Like we knew ki, like this is not going where we wanted to go, and like we have to figure out a way to get the fuck out of here. Like those, I think there was about 1 or 2 months there where we just wake up and be like, what the fuck? Like, another day of this shit. That is one type. The second type is just days like when these service requests would come in, like, hey, this is not working. How the fuck can you do this to us? This, that, this, that. Like it's very nice to like romanticize the startup journey. But like everything is romantic retrospectively, like in the moment, I think maybe 30 to 40, maybe 50% chalo is good, where you are like, okay, this is good fun, we're building something cool, we're meeting interesting people, whatever. But the remaining 50% is just like not something you look forward to, not something I want to do again.
Oh, 100%. And I don't mean that it's fun in the sense that, oh, it's rosy and I enjoy it. I wake up and it's going to be a good day. I think that's a separate thing which I'll probably come to. But the point is that, assuming that we never get to the end, are you okay doing this? And your answer should be like, yeah, you know, I'm ready to do this because I just enjoy the process.
I think for us living together made a massive difference as well. I don't mean like just you and me. I mean like the entire group of folks that we live with. Like that was what made like Gurgaon bearable, right? Like the rest of Gurgaon wasn't really fun. Yeah. Living in like the Jade with like Nadeem, Chuck, Maju, and then eventually Garvit and all was good fun.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe for us, I think at that point of time, our mind frame also was very different because like at that point of time, I don't think we could have thought about, hey, what do we want to do for the rest of our lives? But now, say for example, when we are closing 30, even for you, right?
Fuck.
If you were to think about the life you live right now and be like, hey, Louis, let's extrapolate this till the end of your life, right? You're going to live this lifestyle and you're going to die. Are you happy living this lifestyle? Your answer would probably be, you know what?
Yeah, maybe I don't mind it.
More tweaks. I'll do this for the rest of my life.
Correct, yeah. And maybe I'm guessing it's the same for you as well in Singapore.
100%. Assuming that the constraints of Singapore is like, you know, I don't know if I can live here for long and for so on and so forth. But assuming all of this gets solved for, like the life I live right now, I can continue living this in perpetuity. And I feel that is super important because once you have that, dealing with the day-to-day bullshit, you just have to deal with it. Like you deal with it in your job, you deal with it in a company. There's no going away. Like,
man, but don't you, like, I don't know. I think I've become like this. I'm curious to know if you've become like this as well, where like everything I do or like I want to do now, I think a lot more about what it will mean for the next like 5 years. Like maybe it's like a function of like, I value my time more now than I did back then. I don't know. But like back then you would just do things like, okay, chalo, let's try and see. Like even the whole startup idea of like, let's try. Maybe we didn't think through it enough before starting, right? Like maybe we're just like, chalo, everyone's doing startups now. This sounds like a great idea. Let's see where it goes.
Yeah.
Now, the percentage of like, let's see where it goes is a lot less. Like I'm always like, okay, what will happen? Think about it. Maybe write it down, you know, and then do it if it works out in my head after a while. Yeah.
I think the same. I don't know why that has changed. My initial gut answer to that is we've followed a certain strategy for 10 years and that hasn't really, I won't say that hasn't really worked out, but that hasn't really, you know, got us anywhere.
Like you've not hit your peak yet. Like you've not hit the peak that you want to reach is what you're saying.
I don't think peak, but like maybe we did not reach the goals we had envisioned for ourselves. And probably the goal was just badly set and the strategy was even worse. But I truly feel that now is when I'm starting, right? Okay, now I'm going to think, or maybe, you know, it's the same thing.
No, but like who's to say in like 10 years, you'll see the same thing about yourself now.
Maybe.
Like, I don't know.
Maybe.
I think we've had this discussion before. Like I think life just gets unstructured at some point, right?
Yeah.
And then we all struggle to deal with that lack of structure. Like, usually for the typical person who we would have followed, you know, would have been like, whatever, go to 10th standard, get good marks, go to 12th standard, get good marks, get into a good college, do well, get a good job, answer some MBA exams, get into B school, get a good job, you know, then work for 3-4 years, get married, have kids, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. So that's the structure that people typically follow. But for most people, it breaks down after like either B school or marriage.
Yeah.
For us, we didn't have B school and we're nowhere close to getting married. So for us, it broke down straight after like consulting 2 years, right? So we've now been in this lack of structured space for like what, 4 years now, I think? 4 or 5 years. And I've gotten used to it. I'm guessing you've also gotten used to it. But like yeah. we see our friends who are like just entering that phase now being like, oh my God, what the fuck? What is happening? You know, I'm getting depressed, that kind of thing. And I think we just went through that early and we went through it like in a nicer environment, right? Like with other people around us. Like we had each other, we had everyone else in the house. Yeah. Whereas now folks are going through it like all alone, sitting by themselves, being like, oh fuck, my life is a mess.
Yeah.
And it will happen to everyone at some point. Like, yeah, chalo, like maybe the guys that have, you know, get married, have kids all like perfectly in order might not feel that lack of structure because the kids will replace that structure for them, where it'll become kids' school and kids' education and so on and so forth. But for those of us that don't have kids in the next couple of years, everyone's going to face this problem. And we've just faced it already.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And you're right. I've been talking to some friends of ours recently and I think I wrote one of the essays around this. So at least I made a mention that we don't talk to our friends enough, assuming that they don't understand our problems. But more often than not, somebody has gone through that. Because I was talking to like one of our friends recently and I was like, oh, you're going exactly through what I was going through when I was doing Nivasa. Like, this is ditto. Like, hey. But for people who are listening, like, describe to me what that dealing with like unstructured felt like.
I mean, I don't know if I'll be able to do it justice because it's a complicated emotion or like a complicated kind of thing in your head. But essentially what happens is like you follow this particular path where like, you know, you put an input in and you get a particular output. Or at least you keep repeating that input till you get the output because you know that that's the relationship between the two. Then at some point there is like no relationship left, right? Like there is no output that you're aiming for anymore. So you don't know if your inputs are going in the right direction. Like for us, that happened maybe towards the end of Nivasa. Maybe up till the middle of Nivasa, it was all good. We were like thinking, okay, our input is to build a large company. Like that's our goal output, sorry. So our inputs are all the efforts into this company. Towards the end of Nivasa, we realized, okay, that's not happening because of, you know, reason A, B, and C. And like now what? And that's not a fun place to be because like not having a goal is like, according to me, the worst times in my life have always come when like I lacked goals or I lacked clear goals rather. And this is like the time when there is no goal to aim for. You have to create your own goal. And even when you create your own goal, you don't know if you're creating the right goal or not. Right? Like, because there's no playbook. Like, you're not doing what everyone else is doing or everyone else is telling you to do. So I don't know I don't have an answer to like how I overcame it or whatever. But it's like a weird mix of like maybe, I don't know if anxiety is the right word, but like just uncertainty and like slight fear maybe in some way of like, you know, what if I don't do what I'm capable of doing? Because like we followed a nice path throughout our lives where like everyone was like, oh, well done, you know, you did a good job. And now suddenly like, first of all, there's no metric to measure whether you've done well or not. So forget about people telling you you've done well or not. Like you have to make your own internal metric and be happy with it. And there's no way to tell you how to make that internal metric also. Like, so it's very weird. It's a very like blurry space to be in. But eventually you just become comfortable with it. And then like at the moment now, I don't face that problem at all. And I don't know why that is. Like, maybe I've just come to terms with it. But I don't.
You messaged me recently saying that one thing you've learned is doing things without a goal in mind.
That's something I learned very recently, like in 2020 only, like because 2020 has been a garbage year. Like I don't want to get into details, but like you know them.
Yeah.
It's definitely been the worst year of my life. I wouldn't say it's been the worst year of my life, but it's had the lowest lows of any year in my life. It's also had the highest highs of any year in my life. But yeah, maybe those average each other out. But it's been a terrible year. But towards the end, like with the entire, you know, just creator economy popping up on the internet and me deciding to like just write for fun, explore my curiosity because I wanted to, not because like it led me somewhere, worked out well for me. And like at the moment, like that's probably one thing that brings a lot of structure into my life where like I am doing things for no reason, but I'm doing them on like a regular cadence, and they're leading to like good things. Like things are working out in that sphere and I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, maybe that's a strategy like that I should continue to follow, I guess. I mean, my the length of time I followed it is probably like too short to make long-term decisions. It's been like, what, 2 or 3 months? But so far it's working out, man. Let's see. Yeah. I don't know.
So talk to me about that. You recently launched a newsletter called Complexity Condensed. Talk to me about what is complexity condensed. Why did you start it? And you know, what is your goal with that? Or maybe there is no goal of it.
Yeah, there is no goal at the moment. But like, I can tell you why or how it came about.
Yeah.
I started a random Twitter account at some point last year. Not last year, this year, in 2020, like in April or something. Just an anonymous Twitter account, just to like explore Twitter and give gyan on the internet, basically. While I was doing that, I found this course online about design. And I've always been fascinated by design, but I never knew how to design stuff. So I was like, chalo, $99, that's a lot of money, but like this course looks cool. Let's try it. So I tried it. Learned a ton. Used that design stuff in this anonymous Twitter account that I was using. And like people started lapping that shit up. Okay, like I got like 3,000 followers or so in like a few months. And I was like, wow, 3,000 followers, like way more than I have on any of my social channels. Like something is working here, like this internet, like the reach that you have, because all these 3,000 people are like random folks, you know, like living abroad or wherever.
By the 3,000, I started my Twitter profile recently and I have managed to get 8 followers. Lewis being one
you
of them.
You have 9, bro. You have 9.
Nine followers. So you whipped up 3,000 followers in a period of what? 2 months? 3 months?
Like, yeah, about 3 months, yeah.
So that's crazy. What were you posting? Like, what were you talking about?
So it was a bunch of random shit. Like, it started off with, like, I would just, like, summarize books that I was reading. Okay? Like, so I got a bunch of people that were following for that. Then I just started giving gyan, dude, like taking these weird like quotes about life and like using my design skills to like just design a cool image for that and posting it. And like it's stuff that's very like retweet worthy. Like people want to share it because they connect with it because of the visual. So they like share it and then it goes semi-viral or whatever and like more people follow you and that kind of thing. So yeah, I mean, that happened. And then I realized, okay, I don't want to do this shit anonymously because like how long am I going to give gyan that, you know, half of it I don't believe in. I'm just doing it because it sells. So then I was like, chalo, let's take this more seriously. And I found this, a tweet by this company called OnDeck, or the startup called OnDeck, which was basically advertising like a writing fellowship. And I've never written seriously before. This happened somewhere in like September. I was like, chalo, I'll apply. What is the worst that'll happen? They'll deny me or like reject me. Applied. It was their first fellowship. So somehow they took me and I guess demand was low or whatever. Got in. And then I was like, okay, now what the fuck do I write on the internet? Like, I don't want to give gyan anonymously. And I don't have any specific skill sets, right? Like you, we're both like generalists. Like, I don't know something about like, I don't know, quantum physics or like, I can't write about a particular type of topic. But at the same time, I know a little about a lot of stuff. Like, I read a lot. Like, the last few books I've read, last few years I've read like hundreds of books combined. So I know a little bit about like tons of things, but like not enough to be an expert at any one thing. Now combined with that, I also had like a newfound design skill where I was like, chalo, I can draw shit like digitally. So I was like, why not just create a newsletter or create a, like, I don't know if you can call this a newsletter, but like, why not write on the internet where I pick up a random topic that I am curious about, but I don't know much about. I learn about it and then I write about it along with like a few designs here and there to make it like easier for other people to understand. And I did that, man. So I've written like very random topics. Like I've written stuff about quantum computing. I've written stuff about like hangovers. I've written stuff about world wars and yeah, a bunch of other things.
How do you decide what to write about?
I have a list on Roam that I maintain, that includes topics that I'm curious about and also includes topics that people send me, like the readers that I have send me that they want to know about. And every week, like I just published one article, like just before getting on this call. I still don't know what I'm going to write about next week, but I will, I'll just go look at the list maybe tomorrow and see what's like the most interesting thing to me tomorrow. And then pick it and like study about it and then write about it in exactly 500 words and draw a few pictures and hopefully people like it.
You've racked up some 2,000 followers?
Yeah. Yeah, I have like 2,100 and something today. I have a very unhealthy obsession with like refreshing that page to see like how many followers I have. But yeah, I think it's 2,150 or so.
And like the mayor of Miami follows you.
I think so, yeah. It's fun, man. It's very, it's completely new to me. So it's fun. Like when people like it, they share it with other people that like it. And occasionally the people that share it are like people with large followings. And that leads to like spikes in subscribers.
What is your goal? What is your mission of complexity condensed? It's a cool name, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I don't have a goal with it, man. Like, my goal was initially to just get smarter about things that I want to be, like, I want to learn about. So that continues to be my goal. Having said that, in 2021, I want to try and make some money off it. Like, I mean, who doesn't? So if I have enough like followers, I'll see if I can put some ads in there somehow and see what happens. I don't know how that works exactly, but I'll figure it out. But I mean, besides that also, like, I think the sheer like randomness of the kind of people that follow me or that subscribe to this thing has like unlocked this whole idea of like, you know, oh fuck, the internet is huge and I need to figure out a way to make money using the internet. Yeah. By using the internet, I mean like by using the internet to reach people that are not around me.
Yeah.
Like it's one thing to like leverage the internet to, you know, make an offline business more efficient and like deal with people in India or deal with people in Goa. Yeah. It's another thing to like use an online business, like create an online business that sells like digital stuff that can be sold to people in America or Australia.
Yeah.
And I want to try to do that this year, like in 2021.
Yeah. No, I agree. Because when you were telling me about this, I remember speaking to a friend and I was like, you know, despite the fact that we have, you know, whatever, we've had the internet, like, you know, we've grown up with the internet, you know, we tried to start a business which was, you know, using the internet. I think we still haven't fathomed or comprehended the power of the internet can do. And it sounds like super yeah. weird because like we are supposed to be like the generation who, you know, I don't know, fucking uses the internet, right? We got WhatsApp and we got Instagram. But like based on like what you like, like with the newsletter and the kind of following you've built and the stuff you already started doing, right?
Mm.
I was just like trying to wrap my head around and like, I don't think I really have understood the internet economy. Like I've understood how the internet can help the physical economy, but I still haven't fathomed the internet economy yet.
Correct. I think what you're referring to is like digital products again, like you,
yeah.
Like we think of value in terms of physical products more than anything else. Like, you know, hey, I want to drink a cool drink or like buy a cool watch or whatever. But value can also be like transmitted digitally, right? Like prime example is like what Bitcoin.
Yeah.
But like for people like us who are non-tech guys, it's one, though it's difficult to build digital value using like code. Our only option is that we can build digital value using media. And that is like just, I'm just starting to realize the kind of reach of that because of like writing online. So like, I think you with this podcast is exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
Build value using like whatever content and media and scale it because the cost of scaling it is zero, man.
Yeah. And while you do all of this, you continue to do a day job.
Yeah. I mean, eventually I wanted to merge. I work with a family business. We run a bunch of supermarkets, other retail stores and a couple of hotels as well. I'm planning on like the plan for that business offline is to move into other sectors this year. So like getting into manufacturing of liquor and stuff. But I also want to like get into the internet economy somehow. And now that I've got a taste of, you know, what is possible with the internet, I don't know how, I have no idea at the moment, but hopefully in the next year or two, that becomes more like crystal in my head where I figure out a way to make money for the offline business, but using a separate arm of the business that I build from scratch on the internet and hopefully build using like money coming in from people abroad, not from Indians, because like that's where the gold is, man. Like the Americans have so much cash, it's ridiculous.
So what's interesting is you've done corporate, you've done consulting, which is like as white collar as it gets. You've done startup and now you've most recently done like family business and now, you know, whatever, like solo internet thingy. Mm. Like I'm very curious to know about the family business part of it. And I don't think we've spoken it at length, right? I understand, you know, what you do and the business, but how was the transition from Nivasa going into the family business? And in specific, like what are the biggest, you know, challenges you went through? Because like there are many people like us who, you know, spend a couple of years and then eventually transition into family businesses. Yeah, right. Talk to me about that.
No, so I think Nivasa was like a nice kind of segue into it because if I had to go directly from consulting into like family business, it would have been a big like transition to make, because you're going like right from, you know, basically sitting in the sky, giving gyan to people, eating fancy food, traveling nicely, etc., to like, okay, like working for a business that's running hotels and supermarkets, etc. It's very different.
Yeah.
But Niwasa was like the opposite of consulting, right? Like if consulting was up here in the sky, Niwasa was like on the ground.
Yeah.
And like the family business is like somewhere in the middle at the moment, because it's at a scale where like I don't have to be involved in daily operations. I have to just be involved at the level where I make decisions regarding what the operations will be like.
Mm.
So like, it's like if I hired a consultant for the business, like that's what they would do.
Yeah.
So it's a nice middle ground between the two. So there are times obviously when I have to get my hands dirty and like, you know, do like operational stuff. Like for example, starting a manufacturing business will involve a lot of that kind of work.
Yeah.
But at the same time, majority of my time is just like looking at numbers, running, you know, Excel models and seeing what's happening where, which is like consulting type work. But I was fortunate that I got into the family business at a time where it was at that scale. Mm-hmm. If I had to get into it at a, you know, at a scale which was much lower, it would have been much more similar to Niwasa and maybe like a lot less enjoyable.
Yeah.
Because it would have been, you know, a lot of grunt work that I don't particularly love.
but what, like, did you face any challenges getting into the business?
Oh man, like I've always been mentally prepared for it, because like ever since I can remember, like that's always been my like set path in life, like for better or for worse. Like I knew I had to come and do this.
Yeah.
So I think I miss working with a lot of smart people. Like my uncles are smart. You know, the kind of conversations you have or whatever, that's very different, like different from consulting and different from the startup world as well. During my consulting days, like there would be days where I'd go to office and you'd feel good about going to office. You'd be like, okay, yes, I'm going to be working on this cool problem with like cool people. And we're going to eat like cool food and like, do cool things, you know, like that entire vibe is not there anymore. Like right now it's me and my uncle who work together and I enjoy that process. Now my cousins joined as well, so it's nice.
I think the one good thing, I don't know if one, but something which came along with the family business was you moving back to Goa. And given it's 2020, half of the world is moving to Goa.
Fuck yeah. So, Goa is the Miami of India, bro.
Do you enjoy just living at home?
Like generally, I moved here alone and I love living alone. It's been more like Gurgaon in that manner than living in Goa. See, so life in Goa is like, is a good middle ground between life in like Delhi and like life in the middle of nowhere. You have enough work to do and you have a lot of like fun things that you can do if you want. And the best part is you always have people that you know from outside of the state coming in for like holidays. Mm-hmm. So like it's extremely easy to keep in touch with like folks from college and all. Like people that I actually was friends with. Because every year there's like everyone makes almost one trip to Goa every year.
Yeah.
And like I've reached a point where I'm just like, fuck, I don't want to meet these people now. Like they'll come and be like, hey, let's go drink. And I'll be like, no, bro, like, I don't want to.
Yeah.
But you can't say that. But like at least you have that option, right? Like it's never a lonely place to be. I recommend moving to Goa. If anyone here is listening to this podcast and is interested in like working remotely in India, like please come to Goa. We have good internet also. People say a lot of bad things about our internet, but it's not true. I'm doing this on Goan internet and I can see Ruben very clearly.
Yeah, this is a great recording. Lewis's house has fantastic internet. My house in Margaon does not have great internet.
That's because you don't have a like a wired connection. Get one of those broadband wired connections.
I need to get my house. So when I was thinking about what else I wanted to chat with you, I feel, or at least when I was thinking about myself, and you know, both of us went through similar journeys. I remember having hour long conversations, both of us sitting in that, you know, that room on top of the roof.
That fucking room, dude. Yeah, that cool poster saying do epic shit or something.
Yeah, and a cool poster said do epic shit or something like that. And I think this was a mix of reading a lot of like Sapien like books. Probably that was the start of it. And drinking a lot of coffee. I don't know how you got into coffee, but how did you get into
coffee? Cool, actually. I was in the US on one of those consulting visits and I had an American flatmate. And one day he just like bought coffee from Blue Bottle and he made it and he was like, hey, you want some? I was like, why not, dude? So he made me this really cool Colombian coffee and I was back then like a coffee noob. So I put like milk and sugar and I loved it. And I loved that whole vibe of like, you know, living in New York City in this funky apartment, like living a life, basically drinking fucking coffee from Colombia or some shit. I was like, wow. So like then it became a fascination. Then like every day he'd like brew me coffee, and then gradually it became like, okay. One day I was like, dude, why are you having it without sugar? He was like, no man, the milk is like adds sweetness to it. I was like, fuck, this guy's crazy. But anyway, then I tried it after a few days. It tasted okay without sugar. Then when I came back to India, I was having coffee with milk, no sugar. Then gradually I reduced the milk and then made it black coffee. And like ever since I've just been like a coffee. I don't think I'm addicted because I just have like one or two cups a day, but like I'm very passionate about how I brew my coffee, what I buy. Just like I spent too much money on coffee equipment. Yesterday I backed a Kickstarter project for $323 or euros, I forgot. For like this cool automatic coffee grinder. I'm like, bro, this is so stupid. I don't know if this thing is going to work or not, but it looks amazing and I want it on my table. So I'll tell you in Jan if it works out.
Okay. If I do like start thinking about where we started like shifting beliefs, it was probably, you know, those conversations in those rooms. So what I was curious to know from you is, I of course have a bunch of beliefs which have changed, and I can trace many of them back through, you know, the inception was Ayers and Nivasa. But what are like some changes in beliefs you've gone through, which probably originated at the same time?
Dude, this is the kind of question you should send me before this podcast, man. Like, how am I supposed to come up with this stuff on the spot?
Think about it. If it's a bad answer,
okay, you give me an example. You give me an example first, like of what you've changed, and then I'll at least take your lead and move in that direction.
So bunch of things. For example, I think for me, shifts in belief were, you know, like money and religion. I think that was one of the strong thing I remembered, or that was at least one of the seeds that.
What about money and religion?
Like the world's strongest forces are a figment of our imagination. And you know, that was basically money and church, and not church, like religion. And I think one part of that resulted in, you know, whatever my craze for crypto and Bitcoin and whatever, you know, us getting into it, you know, back in what we started reading about in
2016. Yeah.
And
16 we bought, I think.
Yeah. And a big driver of that was we believe that, hey, you know, this money system right now, forget about what people are saying, but it is a figment of imagination, right? So that was one. Then, you know, stuff like around, you know, what do we want in life? How do we deal with uncertainty? You know, what should we do next? We were in this, like you said, right? We were in this spot wherein we did not have a goal and we had to deal with it, right? We had to deal with it ourselves. Yeah, now that you ask me, it's a hard question.
Yeah, it's a hard fucking question, dude. What beliefs have changed? I mean, I'm sure there are like hundreds of beliefs that have changed, but like I have to figure out what I believe now that I didn't believe then.
What are like strong beliefs you hold right now, which probably you did not have? Or you had counter beliefs, you know, 5-7 years ago. For me, one example is like relationships. For the longest time, I did not value them. And, you know, I had a very different perception of them. But now my belief is very different. If you think of my Maslow's hierarchy, and Maslow's hierarchy is a bad example, work would be the pinnacle, right? Like work is everything. But, and maybe this is something which has been brewing over the years, but for me now, work is just one of the many things I need to do. Like one big change in my belief, and I'm not acting on it, is like physical health, right? If you don't focus on your body, you're not going to have the energy. Like if you don't focus on like meditating, yeah. That's another thing, right? We fucking got into meditating. We started meditating when? Like 2016. And it was,
yeah, I think so.
Way before any of this was like mental wellness and all was cool, right?
Fuck, yeah. I don't know how. I think that led to like Vipassana and like
TM. Yeah. You started meditating and you got me into meditating.
Headspace, yeah, probably Headspace.
Probably again.
Yeah, probably did it because apps were cool. Apps were cool, not because meditating was cool. Like it was cool to have all these new apps, and then we just did that and got an app and then got into it somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Like going to your question of beliefs changing, so I definitely don't have an answer at the moment. But I think like just, I can talk about like worldview changing rather than beliefs changing. Yeah. It's not exactly a belief. But like, I think I started reading books in like 2013 or 2014. Before that, it was like, you know, whatever, college type reading and stuff. And I actually have Darshit to thank for this. I don't think I've ever told him this before. But I remember this one day where he came to me and he was like, bro, you got to read this book called Sapiens. This was like in 2013, I think. I was like, kya hai Sapiens? Like, you know, why are you so like on about it? I was like, okay, I'll order it. So I ordered that book. And then after that book, though, like it just sparked this entire understanding of the world. In ways that you never bothered to like question, right? Like you were saying, like why is religion important? Why does money exist? Like everything, like why does everything, like the whole chain of like why's, why, why? And then you gradually go to like so many parts, like that curiosity has led me to reading about like the most random crap. Like I read about psychology, I read about philosophy, I read about like things that don't matter to me. I read a book about how cities are designed. Like I don't give a shit about how cities are designed, but that's like interesting. So like my entire worldview has become a lot more like, you know, diverse is the right way, but like it's become a lot more interconnected. That's a better word to use. Where I constantly look for like connections between different systems. And that might sound very like fucking woo right now, like high level, but it's very useful when you're like trying to build something in any manner. Like for example, I don't know, I'm thinking out loud now, but like, let's say I'm thinking about like writing a newsletter. I'm writing about things that I'm curious about. Why am I writing about it? Because I just want to feel smarter. Maybe some other people want to feel smarter. Maybe they want to fucking read about it. If they read about it, okay, why will they, what will they get out of it? Like, can I give them something in there that, you know, improves their lives in some manner enough for them to want to share it with someone else? What if they share it with someone else? What if he has a fucking big following? What if he shares it with someone else? Eventually, can I create enough value among enough people by doing this one thing where like I can make money off of it? Maybe, I don't know. But like just this constant need to like dig one level deeper and be like, okay, what if this happens? Where can I go with it? Or like, why is this happening? What does that mean? What can I do with it? It's just something that I never had before 20. I mean, it's constantly evolving, but I think it started somewhere when I started reading books in like 2013-ish. So I think that's changed a lot for me now as compared to back then. It was just like, okay, fuck, let's do this. Yeah, chal, let's do it. Hey, everything is fucking connected. And if you bother to look for the connections, you can take something out of it. Mm. Or like you can, you know, whatever, leverage it to make money, whatever you want to call it. And that sense of questioning never turned up in college. Like, although, you know, Stephens is supposed to be a cool place where you go and meet the smartest minds, I don't think we had the smartest conversations then.
Yeah.
I think we did make like the best relationships, but like we were still bothered about like dumb shit. Like, hey, you know, I need to get an, like a, whatever, I need to get my attendance right. Or like, yeah, this exam, or like get res, or like just like things that like we were very childish in that sense. Like I feel like 17 to 20 is like too young an age for all that stuff to happen.
Yeah.
And that happened like post 21 for me. And fortunately, we were still surrounded by like smart people.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, college didn't spark that interest in like, you know, like economics. If you think about it now, like it's fascinating, man. Like the kind of stuff you can read about, like even like cryptocurrencies, for example. Like why didn't we think about that shit in college? Like Bitcoin was around in 2013, right, when we were graduating. Like why weren't we like bothered to know about what is money? Why does it exist? Why can crypto take over traditional forms of money? Like that's a super interesting question. Yeah. But like we never thought about it back in college.
Yeah. And the irony of it all, and I clearly remembered like having this conversation in college, is we learned money multiplier and how,
yeah,
you know, $10 becomes $100 in the economy.
Fucking, yeah, and we never questioned it.
And we never questioned it. We went through financial crisis, and I remember asking one of our profs is, hey, you know, financial crisis just happened. Banks bailed out trillions of dollars. Where did that money go, right? If you, like, trillions of money just vanished. What do you mean it vanished? Like, clearly there was money moved from one person to another person. And then she told me very calmly that, you read about the money multiplier, right? That money was never there. And now when I look back and I'm like, oh, now like, if I had somebody told me, hey, Ruben, just why don't you look at this crypto thing? It's like the counter antithesis to what you're studying. I would have surely bought some crypto. But you're right. Yeah. Like we had all the, like we had the curiosity, but we just,
we didn't do anything with it, right? We were just like, chalo, let's clear this exam.
Yeah.
Or like whatever other stupid thing you're up to that day. But I mean, it gave us a network like that, though I'm always grateful for. And those 3 years were like the best years that they could have been. Like they were fucking amazing. Like 3 years in college, intellectual curiosity or not, they were amazing.
Yeah.
So I don't regret it.
Yeah. So what are you chasing these days? What does the future look like?
Very good question, man. I was thinking about this a few days ago. I don't have a proper answer, but I have like a certain sense of where it's headed. I think we are headed to like extreme decentralization of everything. I think cryptocurrencies is doing it for like currencies or like money, but you are going to see decentralization of even like normal businesses like soon. The moment it becomes easier for like people to, what's the word, commoditize their time or efforts, probably using like crypto as well in some sense. You will see like decentralization of the workforce. Like people are not going to want to work in offices anymore. You're going to want to work from wherever you want to work. And eventually, I think the peak of decentralization will happen where you will see a majority of companies being one-person companies, where rather than have a workforce of 500 people, you know, with accountants and designers and whatever, marketing divisions, et cetera, you will be a company of one. Your brand will be what you are selling. You will either sell to a consumer who's buying a product from you, or you will sell to another company of one who's buying a service from you. So if you're the best marketer in the world, you'll just sell marketing as a service from you to maybe 10 brands at the same time and make money as and when you feel like you want to make money. I don't know how that's going to play out in the near future, but in the long run, I can see that like creating ridiculous social like unrest. So to replicate your efforts for a lot of these things, maybe not for marketing, but like for a lot of these, your efforts will not be linear, right? Like you do it once, you can scale it to 100. And that will end up concentrating wealth in these people's hands, the people that are the most skilled. And the remaining, whatever, 90% or 99% is going to be like, what the fuck? Where are we going to get our money from? And then either that will lead to like revolutions in, I don't know, this is going quite haywire. I had an interesting thought today as well. If you look at government employees today, they are basically a disguised form of universal basic income. They're overstaffed in offices. They don't do their work properly. They're basically useless. Like you can run a government office with 1/10 the staff, but the remaining folks are just there so that they get income, so that they have something to go home and feed their families with. Right? You could just tell them, sit at home, don't come to this office, and I'll give you that money. But then they wouldn't have a purpose in life. They wouldn't want, they wouldn't feel like they were contributing to something, or they wouldn't have social status, et cetera, et cetera. So a lot of like government, maybe the government will increase in size. They'll just create jobs for everyone as like a disguised form of whatever, unemployment benefits or universal basic income. I don't know how it's going to work.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there will be problems, man. Like it's not going to be, the next 10 years are not going to be free of like revolution the way you're seeing in some countries already.
Yeah, no, I'm quite intrigued to see how all of this pans out, because I think the last 10 years has been this entire, I think, like you said, like infrastructure for these one member, one person companies has been set up. And if you think about it, when we were in college, I clearly remember you had just got that HTC phone and we had just got WhatsApp. And I was like, you know, I'm going to buy the 33 rupees SMS pack. And that was just 10 years ago. Now, like we're all, like you can already see signs of using all of this infrastructure to see at least some rays of people like you and me, right? Be like, okay, we can potentially start companies which are 100% built on this. And over the next 10 years, it's probably going to become normal. And what that means, I don't know, because a lot of these platforms, a lot of these creator platforms, it is very like, you know, Pareto, right? Wherein 1% of the creator population makes 90% of the revenues, if not even lesser. And everybody else is like, who sold us this dream? This shit doesn't work. And
so I think like everyone needs two things in their life, right? Like everyone wants economic capital and everyone wants like social capital.
Yeah.
And I think both those things are going to get like very skewed in one direction, skewed towards a certain set of people. Unless we've, and I honestly think social capital is more important than economic capital, because at the level of like GDP or whatever that we are at, like most governments in the world can afford to feed their people. Even India can afford to feed its people. But social capital will be the one that people need to figure out. Like, how do you ensure that somebody who's sitting at home being fed for free feels like he's worth something? Because if he doesn't feel like he's worth something, like that's like, I don't know if this is like politically correct or not, but like that's basically the typical Trump supporter, right? Like they're low on social capital. Trump is promising them social capital, being like, hey, you're the best. Come to me and let's be bullies together or whatever. And they're going to him. Like he's fulfilling that need. How is that going to play out across the rest of the world? Because Trump's system is not like a stable system. It'll happen for 3-4 years. Trump will leave and then they'll be back to square one. Or they'll like just implode while he's around.
That's super interesting.
Yeah, I mean,
like, because what I'm thinking is most companies promise you, hey, I can help you make more money. Like those companies are the best companies, right? Hey, you know, I can help you make money. I wonder if there are like, there's a possibility of a company saying that, hey, I can help you build social capital.
Yeah. So stuff like Quora and Reddit are interesting examples, right? Like if you're sitting at home answering like questions on Reddit or answering questions on Quora, you get those points or whatever. I forget what they're called.
Yeah.
That is basically a form of social capital, right? Like if tomorrow you tokenize those things and you say you can exchange this stuff for other digital goods or whatever, like you can just spend your entire day doing nothing, just sitting at home answering questions on Quora. And that's one example. I'm sure there are other ways to do it as well.
Yeah.
Just gaining capital as being helpful or being knowledgeable or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, very, very interesting to see what happens in the next 10 years or so. Maybe less than 10 years, this shit is going to blow up.
Does it scare you, some of this?
No, because I think I'm in the top 1% of like people who can figure out a way to make money and keep their social capital online. And like, yeah, I sound like a dick, but like, I honestly believe that. So from that aspect, it doesn't scare me. From obviously whether society will implode or not, yeah, like that's scary. Like someone's going to have to figure out a solution. And the person who figures out a solution will also end up being the top 1% because like that's a massive problem to solve.
Yeah. What advice would you want to give somebody who's in the 99%?
Like become religious maybe. Like that helps, right? Like with just... I'm not even joking.
You tweeted about honestly, this, you know, like when your dad had COVID, you tweeted that be religious.
Yeah. So like, I'm not a religious person, right? Like, you know, I've not been religious probably since like 2012 or 13. I don't know. But like, I think not being religious lets you be very high handed and be like very, you know, intellectual, like, hey, look at me. I'm so cool. I know religion is just like a structure built so that society maintains peace, etc. This, that. But at the same time, by gaining those intellectual brownie points, you lose out on the comforting effects of religion, where when things are out of your control in times of uncertainty, where you don't control the outcome, people that are religious tend to be much more calm because they leave the outcome to God, right? Like they'll say, okay, God, it's in your hands, do what's best. And no matter what happens, they feel like, okay, God did what was best. Whereas people like us who are not religious, we'll be like, oh, fuck, what do we do? We can't do anything. Oh, fuck, what do? We can't do anything. And then you just kill yourself with anxiety. So in that sense, like religion is good. So if I had a choice to go back to 2013 and, you know, decide whether to be religious or not, I would say I would continue to be religious because the downsides of religion are basically just like 1 hour every Sunday, maybe, where you have to go to church. But the upsides are very, very high when there are times of uncertainty.
Do you see yourself becoming religious now?
No, man, there's no going back. No, it's like knowing a fact and then trying to fool yourself into not believing it. Like that, it's not how it works. So it's like one of those irreversible things that you don't, like you can't change anymore. It's happened, it's happened. Okay.
Yeah.
But like I wouldn't tell anyone, hey, God is, or like, hey, religion is just a, you know, structure built to keep society peaceful. Like, I would just shut up if someone was asking about that. Interesting to see what will happen if I have kids though. Like, I don't know what I'll do.
Or like say, you know, you have a niece now, right? What are you, what kind of uncle are you going to be to her? Are you going to be, hey, you know, go to church, Maya? Or you're going to be like, yeah.
No, I mean, I hope I'm not the decision. Like for her, fortunately, I'm not the decision maker, right? Like her parents will decide that for her or not. I'm not going to be like, hey, don't go to church if she wants to go to church. At the same time, if she says, I don't want to go to church, I'm not going to be like, good girl. I'll just be quiet. Like I haven't thought about what I'd do if I had kids and what I had to teach them. Probably just let my wife do whatever she wanted with them. So like again, I'd be absolved of the responsibility. Yeah. What about you? What would you do to your kids? Bro, religious or non-religious?
I feel there's a fine line, or not a fine line, but there is, I think, a broad distinction between religious and spiritual. I would 100% go for spiritual without the like some of the random stuff around religion. So maybe when they are kids, probably, you know, religion is a
you're discounting the fact that a lot of that random stuff, right? You're probably referring to like rituals that seem very stupid, right? Like do this or, you know.
No, I think rituals are fine. I think rituals are fine. What I think when I was thinking about it, the problem is and it's almost like politics, right? Anything which is driven fear-based is hollow. Like there's probably no truth behind it.
Don't you think like the belief in these irrational things that either spark fear or whatever, the collective belief in those things, like along with like, if 100 of us believe the same thing that seems stupid to another person, it kind of binds the 100 of us together. There are people in Goa, including myself, who support Manchester United, right? Yeah. Football. Makes no fucking sense. These guys are in England. I've never been there. I don't know any of these fellows. I have no allegiance to them whatsoever. I just support them for the heck of it. Like, it's fairly irrational for me to do that. But at the same time, I know like 100 other guys who do it irrationally as well. Like at some point, if I'm like with them, I have that commonality, right? Like I feel like, hey, we have something in common. We're a team. Yeah. like religion is just like that, right? Like it's irrational, but when you do it together, so it binds you as a community, and that's important.
So I'm 100% like community, and I think it's important. Like that's something, for example, I lack right now, either not religious or not that religious, not, you know, in a new city. I do not have a sense of community. So I think sense of community is very important. But like the matter of religion, so I think is you need to tick mark spirituality, you need to tick mark community. Religion happens to be one stone, two birds. It gives you community, it gives you some sense of spirituality. But I feel it goes, there are some parts of it which is just ridiculous. I think at least my experience with religion has been is, and maybe it's not the case with everybody, because I know a lot of friends who are super smart, but they're still very religious, is I think at least my experience has been the refusal of acceptance of certain things and just blatant denying is just like, I'm not going to waste my time on this now, right? Like if you think of it like a class, right? You were in a lecture.
Give me an example of what you're talking about, like
blatant acceptance. Suppose you're in a class, right? Oh. And you ask the professor, hey, why is it this way? The professor can be like, hey, I don't know. This is what I do know. This is what our facts, or this is what are, you know, what they call falsifiable beliefs. If you prove it differently, fine. You know, you're right. You've proved it against. But this is the framework, and now you can think about it. Versus, hey, no, this is the right answer. That is the wrong answer. You do not understand because you are your mind is too small. You cannot fathom this. But I
Ruben, religion survives because of non-falsifiable beliefs. Like if the beliefs were falsifiable, religion would have not survived. And the downside of having a non-falsifiable belief that sounds stupid in an argument is worth the upside of maintaining peace in society. It's not fair to like think that religion is stupid because it has non-falsifiable belief. That's the whole point of it.
Yeah. I don't know. I think religion, like for some people's experience of it has been good. I think for me, it's been like, I've not seen too much of value out of it. Or maybe, you know,
yeah, likewise.
I've not been in situations where I've had to fall back. But yeah, let's start talking about religion. Our moms are going to listen to this. They're going to be like,
God,
what did we raise? But the good thing is you would go back and tell yourself in 2013 that stay religious, right?
Yeah, but I don't want my mom to be like, see, I told you so. That's even worse.
but what, and this is a smooth segue, is what other two pieces of advice would you give yourself? Give your 20-year-old or 19-year-old self?
Two pieces.
Yeah.
One, though, I think I would definitely just be like, read more. Like that changed my life single-handedly, or like changed my mentality single-handedly. So like, I think I started reading too late, maybe 22 or something. So like, read when you're in college, like 17-year-old, just fucking read instead of going to sleep in the afternoon, fucking pick up a book and read. That's one. Two, I mean, it's easier to tell yourself, hey, don't think about what other people are doing and, you know, do what you feel like. And I think a lot of your guests have said that, but like, that's something that, yeah, I mean, that's kind of obvious, but I don't know if I would tell myself that. I would just tell myself, like, just think more about why you're doing what you're doing. Like, it's so easy to go with the crowd, right? Like it's, and that's what we did. Like, we just followed the default route for so long. And maybe not always to like bad effects. I think following the crowd is great for like the average person. If you want to be average, that's amazing. But like taking a risk and not following the crowd can lead you like to the bottom of the fucking sea, like Nivasa did with us at some point. And maybe retrospectively it was okay, but, or it can lead you to other places. And maybe you've not reached the peak of the mountain yet by not doing what other people are doing, but at least there's a possibility that we might. And like, that's worth it. So like early on, like just think about why you're doing what you're doing, and like don't let what other people are doing factor, or at least be a large factor in what you're doing.
So a lot of people say this, and I've been thinking about this for a while also, because I tell a lot of people the same thing. Do you have any actionable?
I would have not gotten into consulting. Like if I was in college, I enjoyed my first job. I don't know what else I might have done. I made money. I got to travel. I learned a ton of like hard skills with Excel and that kind of shit, and like just general consulting stuff. But retrospectively, I don't think consulting was the right move. Like I might have been much better off doing an FMCG type job, or even just like work at a startup. I think David Deckard did something really cool that, like, retrospectively, I was like, wow, that was actually a cool job. Like, he worked with, I think, Diageo for a couple of years. Like, Aparna Ricard, sorry. Cool job. Like, just one that we never cared about that much because it wasn't offering that much money. And it was like, okay, it's not consulting. Didn't even apply. Yeah, I mean, even Siddhi's job with TechnoServe was actually pretty cool. Like, they were doing some cool work. Might have been a nice job to apply to. I don't think I even applied. We just applied for consulting because, like, hey, that's what you're supposed to do if you do economics and you want to go to B school. Yeah, I mean, I would have probably done something more out of the way. Also, I would have, I think I did a good thing by not going to business school. Like, that was a very difficult decision to make. Like, when ISP happened, like, that was my dream school when I was in Stephens. And I got into that whatever program they had, YLP. And I was like, fuck, I'm set, dude. I'll do anything for 2 years, consulting, and go there and then figure it out. And then that whole startup bug bit us, right, at some point. And I was like, okay, fuck, do I go to MBA school and accept this offer? Or like just throw the dice at the startup. And I'm really, really happy. Although I don't think I made it for the right decision. I think I made it again because of social pressure, where, like, it was like, not social pressure, but, like, it was a cool thing to do. Starting up was in my mind cooler than going to business school at that point. Not because it was right for me, but because it was cool. Mm. And so I gave up business school and started up. I mean, retrospectively, it's nice for me to say, hey, I went against the crowd or whatever, but, like, honestly, I think it was because starting up was cool.
Yeah.
But I think that worked out really well. Like, I definitely am happy I didn't go to business school. And I didn't apply after that either. And I wouldn't, like, it would have, I don't think it would have added that much value to my career path that I'm on.
Yeah.
So that was a lucky break. But, like, yeah, I mean, like, that, I hope that the decisions I make now are more, like, well thought through.
Yeah. I think my last...
What about you? What would you change? You answer this question first. What
you get to ask me all yourself. At the end.
I'm a special guest. I get at least two.
Okay, you'll get two. But I have one last question in which before which you can ask me is, what is one thing you're very proud about yourself? I don't know if that even grammatically makes sense, but...
I don't know, man. Like, in the last couple of years, you're talking about, like, just generally in life.
So right now, you wake up in the morning some days and it's like, oh, I'm so proud of that.
I don't know, man. There are a bunch of small things. I don't think there are, like, one big thing that I'm very proud of that I've done in life. But, like, at the moment, like, if I had to tell you in the morning what I wake up and what I'm excited about, like, maybe that's a different question to answer. But, like, I'm quite excited about the fact that I've figured out how to make money on the internet, man. Like, I recently made, like, 30 grand on the internet, just selling random shit to people I don't know, digital stuff. So I'm extremely excited about, like, tasting that once. And, like, I'm excited about where that's going to take me in 2021. It's not something I'm proud of per se, as in, like, you know, this is the pinnacle of my life. But, like, I think everything I've done has sort of led to this, where, like, I feel like the potential of what I've tasted is unlimited. I just have to figure out how to tap it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's a slightly detailed answer. Or whatever.
I was expecting that. So
yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that's that. What question do you have?
I get to ask you. I have fucking written down questions for this because I knew you were going to ask me this question. So I have two beautiful ones.
Oh shit.
Okay. Number one will be, yeah, what are you scared of that you'll regret when you're 80 years old? Like, when you're on your deathbed and you're thinking back to the, you know, the life you've lived, like, what is your biggest fear that you might regret?
I know this answer. So it's very hard to describe it, but I think I'll regret that I did not pursue certain things in life. Like, those are, like, highly, highly, like, in my definition and, you know, vocabulary, like beats me at this, is, like, highly, highly creative endeavors. And I'll give you an example, right? And I'm very happy doing this podcast. Like, I would really regret, for example, not being able to produce a movie. I would really regret not being able to, you know, manage sound for, like, a massive 5,000 member concert. So that kind of stuff. Because, like, I've done those at some point of my life and I've really enjoyed it. And the big question mark in my head is, I have no clue if I can, you know, build a livelihood around this, but I really enjoy it. And, you know, I'm like, you know, I'll figure it. I'll do it later. I'll figure it in life. But I'm quite afraid that I'll reach my deathbed. I'm like, you know what, like, you didn't do it, right?
So 2021, man, this is a good time to start resolutions. Like,
oh,
start working towards my goal.
Like, for example, I want to get back to like DJing. Like, I may not become a great DJ, right? But I genuinely enjoy doing that.
Hey, but you're damn good, dude. Like, for people listening, like, if you guys ever have a wedding party that you need a DJ for, like, this guy killed it at my sister's wedding. So, like, please hire him.
No, thanks for that, man. It's a shameless plug. I was looking for that.
It was actually good, man. Like, people still, my uncle still talk about it. They'll be like, oh, fuck, your friend was so good that day. Like, yeah, great.
Like, and if I think about it, right, I started DJing when I was just started, we just joined the workforce, right? Like, in fact, my first campaign. I DJed, I made videos, I've recently started like writing. You know, some people have messaged me saying that, oh, you have a great writer's voice. Oh, if you buy, write a book, I'll buy it. And I'm like, what are you even saying?
Amazing.
Yeah, no, it's crazy.
Oh, fuck, that's amazing.
I think what I would regret when I was 80 is like, you know, what if I pursued that more seriously? Like, I still don't know if I can build a career out of it. I still don't know if, you know, if it's just a whim. We've just been drilled that, oh, that's always a hobby, right? Like, do it. Because
it's like Indian mindset, but like fortunately for us, that's changing now. Like, that's very like, see, in India, everyone's expectation is like below average. So like, average is good, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you make it to average, it's great. So like, just do what everyone who's average is doing and get there somehow.
Yeah.
Fortunately for us, now that's changing because we are privileged to like already be at average or above average, and the internet has suddenly blown up in our faces.
Yeah.
So a lot of these creative random things that you would otherwise need an audience locally to do, you don't need a local audience anymore. Yeah. You can just fucking do it on the internet and sell it and make money.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, yeah, good time.
I think not pursuing those creative outlets. I pursue them as a passion today, but sometimes I just wonder if this could have been my life.
Good.
So yeah.
Cool. I have another question for you, which is probably easier. But what are you most excited about for the next 10 years of your life?
I have an answer to this one too. I think the next 10 years, I am very excited to be on this path, which I know is getting me closer to my likeness, which is the version of myself I want to be when I'm 70 or like 80, when I'm going to die. I think like the last 10 years have been great. And I think they've given me a lot of the fodder and fuel. But if you ask me at any point of my time over the last 10 years, hey, you know, are you confident on the path, the life you're living every day, that you're going to be happy or not happy, that you're going to be content with the life you lived when you're 70? And the answer would have been no. Like, I'm like, I wish I would have done this. I wish I had more time to do this, la, la, la. And I feel like based on what has happened and maybe this year has been like allowed me to reflect, right? I feel I'm slowly starting on that path wherein I'm taking one by one step, which I know if I continue this path, and a lot of it is going to happen in this decade, I'm going to be very, very content or at least satisfied with the life I've lived.
I agree 100%. I feel sort of similarly.
Yeah.
But I think I'm still more unstructured than you. Like, I don't know exactly what, but I know the direction is roughly what I want it to be.
Yeah. And small things like I want to continue to meditate. Because I just want like mentally to be fine. I want to continue being more creative. So I'm doing all of these random things. I need to like, whatever, make sure that money is earning is like, you know, I'm trying to find ways of in, like.
Also another random question. Like, I know for us, or at least for me, like money was always like, okay, I need to make a lot of money at some point. Has money gone down like the pecking order for you at some point? Like, you know?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Cool.
It's gone way down.
Me as well. So I was, yeah.
And for me, what's interesting is like, I think money, and I was telling somebody the other day, the way I think about money, and that hasn't really changed for me for a long time because I've always been a miser. I think between you and me, you had expensive tastes or relatively expensive, more expensive tastes. I never had expensive.
It was just the coffee buster. It was nothing else.
And the fancy watches and the Sonos.
I have one watch. I've never bought a nice watch. I have only one watch. I'm waiting for another watch. I bought my last watch when I got my first salary, which is like 10 years ago or like 7 years ago.
But no, so
Siri, if you're listening, please buy me one. Anyway.
but yeah, I never had expensive taste, but I always want a lot of money. And the reason I think for that is if you think at a circus, right, and acrobats do their shit. The reason why they can do a lot of their shit is because they know if they fall, they're going to fall on a safety net. And to take that analogy one step further is that safety net actually propels you much higher sometimes then, you know, and probably then what you will come from yourself. And that is all what I hope for money. I just want it to be a safety net, which allows me to do those tricks. And if it, like, if I fall down, it not only like prevents me from getting hurt, but it actually pushes me back up. And I think the Nivasa plus Zilingo experience taught me that you can have money, it can all go away, and it can all come back very, very fast.
And it's all the same, right?
It's all the same. And nothing changes.
You still get through it, yeah. You should read this book called The Psychology of Money. I don't know if you have already. It's a new one by... You read it?
No, I bought it, but I want to read it.
Oh, good book. I've done a summary of it on my anonymous profile. I'll send it to you at some point when I tell you what the profile is.
Are you going to make that public?
No, man. I'm going to start just like slowly getting rid of it because I don't want to spend my time on it. I want to build my own. Like, I don't want to hide behind a curtain anymore. Like, and I don't want to fucking feed bullshit to people that I don't believe in. So, like, gradually grow my own Twitter, maybe if I have to grow a Twitter audience, and gradually kind of wrap that one down. I'll keep it. I won't shut it down because sometimes there are just thoughts that are like not safe or like, you know, you cannot see it from your own thing. So it's good to be anonymous.
There is value having different identities. I think that's going to be a big thing. We can't talk about it right now, but just having different identities.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Maybe I'll morph this into something that, you know, is useful for things that I can't say for my own identity. Yeah. But yeah, we'll see.
Awesome. If people want to find you, where can they find you?
Oh, fuck. Shameless plugs. Like, just subscribe to my newsletter, man. It's called Complexity Condensed. Complexitycondensed.com. And then you'll find my links over there. Like, I'll send you to my Twitter. And nothing else at the moment. And once you're on my Twitter, I'll spam you whenever I start something new.
Cool. Thanks for doing this, okay, man.
Yeah, man. It was a fun conversation. Didn't feel like a podcast or whatever. Just felt like a normal thing.
And that's a wrap. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the podcast. I upload new episodes every Friday, and I'll see you in the next one.